It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. And as always, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life well, Rocket can. We have an image problem right now. And it's an image problem with Russell Wilson. Hickey, it's very tough for a guy to become so popular, do nothing wrong off the field, and then the image spiral out of control so quickly. When this guy got traded from the Seattle Seahawks, I think the majority of people thought that Russell Wilson was getting screwed in Seattle, wasn't getting the protection, him and Pete Carroll, Pete was in the wrong, Russ was in the right, and he goes to Denver, and we are only 6 weeks into the season, and right now everyone, and I mean everyone, is saying, Seattle robbed Denver. They got rid of Russ. They got the two first-round picks, other picks as well. The Broncos are so bad that the Seahawks could be drafting their quarterback of the future. Geno Smith is playing better football than Russell Wilson. And right now, it's not only that Russ is playing bad football and he has an incompetent head coach, but it's also like off the field. He doesn't do anything that's awful, awful, terrible that like you're like, wow, I can't stand this guy. But he's just so cringeworthy. The Mr. Unlimited, all the TikTok dances, the terrible commercials that he does. It's very corny. And really, Russell Wilson, who everyone used to love, and it also doesn't help when your former teammates are piling on too. Every single member of the LOB just killing him and killing him and killing him. And they're going to miss the playoffs this year. And I thought I said on the show, they're not going to make the playoffs this year. But I thought they'd be serviceable. I thought they'd be competent. If we look at all the laughing stocks in the NFL right now, is there anyone that tops Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos for this year? In the AFC East, no shot. Bills 5-1, Jets 4-2, Dolphins 3-3, Pats 3-3. AFC West, not the Chiefs, not the Chargers. If you want to tell me it's the Raiders, I personally thought the Raiders would be better than the Broncos this year, but a lot of people thought the Broncos would be better than the Raiders. AFC North? Nope. AFC South? Like, what did you expect the Texans to be? If you look at the NFC East, all right, the Commanders in the conversation. Wentz has been a disaster, now he's out. Daniel Snyder, we know that he's a disgrace, but we've known that for years, and now he may lose the team. But if he loses the team, that would be the first actual positive thing to happen to the Commanders in a long time. NFC West, Cardinals, they look dysfunctional right now. No one else in the NFC West, like the Rams aren't playing well, but I wouldn't say we classify that as a clown show. They just don't have an offensive line right now. The North, like, I don't love the Lions, I don't love the Bears, but I can't say I'm surprised by how bad they are. And in the South, yeah, Carolina's a bleep show. But if you look at the most disappointing team so far in the NFL and the most dysfunctional team in the NFL, from where what you thought they could be before the start of the season and where they are 6 weeks in, can anyone right now, Ryan, top what the Denver Broncos are doing?
No, because it's dysfunctional at head coach. It's bad at quarterback. Like you mentioned, it's cringeworthy off the field. Like, you go back to the Colts loss on Thursday night. Half of the laughing at the Broncos and Russell Wilson is his postgame press conference when he ends it with Broncos country, let's ride.
Yeah.
Like, there was so much to make fun of him for and laugh at just on the field.
And it was such a miserable, because when you think a quarterback saying a slogan like that, and it's not the first time a quarterback comes up with a slogan, but it would be Broncos country, let's ride, right? That's how you envision it being said. But when it comes after a loss and you do it, like, what? Are you tone deaf? You lose in embarrassing fashion where you throw the game away against the Colts and you at the end you go, Broncos country, let's ride. It's like a sad puppy dog begging for a treat.
Now, give him credit. Thankfully, after last night, he did not do the Broncos country, let's ride, leaving his post-game press conference. So maybe there's a little
self-awareness. He should get rid of the Broncos country, let's ride, until he wins a meaningful game in the postseason for the Broncos. I don't want to hear that ever again. It's terrible.
Oh, you know the next win. Like, they beat, like, I don't think, like, let's just say, for example, they're playing the Commanders and the Texans this week, like, one of the worst teams in the NFL. They win. Broncos country. We back.
Oh,
saddle
no,
up.
No,
we're
no,
riding.
No.
He's probably filming it, like,
stop,
on a horse on a ranch somewhere, stop, in Denver the Monday after the game.
And Subway is such a smart company because they hired Russell Wilson. Everyone's talking about the Subway commercials. Now everyone's killing Russell Wilson, but Subway's getting the most publicity they've had in years. That's positive.
The Danger Witch.
Ugh, terrible. How do we fix Russell Wilson? Here'd be my advice. Don't wear these flashy clothes right now. You don't need to cause extra attention because you hit the nail on the head. What was it, early in the year? What was that suit that he was wearing?
Oh, the mint green suit for week one.
You wear the mint green suit to make a statement. And I don't have a problem with him wearing it to the game, but then you lose and you wear it to the podium. It's like, what are we doing? Can't you just wear jeans and a t-shirt? And I don't care quarterbacks having some swag and dressing up, but you're causing extra attention to yourself. I would maybe put the Subway campaign on hold, even though that's money, but you don't need the money. And I would get rid of the Broncos country, let's ride. And I don't know. I maybe look to the other side of the field and try to create an actual genuine connection with your new teammates. Just some advice that I'm giving to Russell Wilson.
Practically, the only way to kind of fix this, I think he needs an assertive head coach. He needs someone to basically take control, like a Sean McVay, like a Kyle Shanahan,
stop,
that just says,
stop. Wait, hold on.
This is my team, Russ. You do this.
But time out. This is the biggest problem that this guy has got to pass for. In Seattle, Pete Carroll's a damn good coach. And what did we say? It was on the coach. Now, I'm not telling you Nathaniel Hackett's good. Nathaniel Hackett's a joke. He shouldn't be a head coach in this league. He's in well over his head. But this is his organization. He wanted it this way. He picked this team. You bring in a new coach, yeah, it may spark some new life. I'm not ignoring that. You may have someone that's competent out of Bozo like Nathaniel Hackett. But I'm not letting the coach be an excuse right now for the incompetence and the terrible play we're seeing from one Russell Wilson.
No, I'm not saying it's an excuse. I think so far through 6 weeks, we've seen he's not a leader. I think you're right. And the part of the assertive coach is that he is a guy that you can't give him full control. I was wrong. I'll be honest. I thought Pete Carroll was a problem. And now you're looking, it's like, I don't agree with Pete Carroll's philosophy. I think he should, you know, come to modern day football. But at least he was an assertive voice that basically said, we're doing this. Like, this is the structure. We're doing this. Russell Wilson needs that guy because Nathaniel Hackett is basically deferring to Russell Wilson. And you watch, the offense is just so out of whack. Whether it's a play calling, whether it's getting guys in the right spots, whether it's looking at the right part of the field, whether it's going through his reads, Russell Wilson cannot be given anything to lead and run. I think so far, just through six games, you see, he's not that kind of guy.
I remember when we had Jay Keeps on, who is the personal quarterback coach to Russell Wilson. And this is when the problem started in Seattle. And I said to him, you guys need to understand that Pete is actually right in some capacity. In terms of, you can't let Russ cook to the level of extreme that you want him to cook because there's been too many interceptions. Yes, there's been a lot of touchdowns, but there's been too many turnovers. But then you can't contain Russell Wilson maybe the way that Pete Carroll wanted to go to the extra extreme. There had to be a middle ground. And how Pete Carroll was the biggest supporter of Russell Wilson, how Russ didn't look back at Pete when Pete believed in Russ when no one else believed in Russ. Remember, they gave Matt Flynn that big contract and they drafted Russell Wilson and he was like a first round pick. How they couldn't find a way to get a middle ground, I don't think that was necessarily more so on Pete now. That was more so on Russ. Because what I've realized with Russ, everything that we thought Russell Wilson was, he's like the opposite. And he's so caught up in being a celebrity, a superstar, the guy. Remember the impetus to all this. He was at the Super Bowl watching Tom Brady. Tampa Bay, Kansas City. And he goes, I want to be like Tom. You're not even close to Tom Brady. Tom Brady's the greatest ever. Like, I understand. Reach for the stars. Have dreams. Have aspirations. You want to be one of the best ever. But that desire to be the best ever, was it more so to say that I'm one of the best quarterbacks ever? Or I'm one of the biggest stars ever and the biggest brands ever and one of the bigger icons ever? Because I'm starting to think that it wasn't really the football part of it. Now, the football does coincide with it, but it was more so the former part of it. Because this dude just seems like he's obsessed with himself, and maybe he's forgetting that football is a team sport. Because I don't even recognize this Russell Wilson. And he had all the excuses last few years. But this dude, I used to love him. I said before the year, he's the fifth best quarterback in the league. Even though I didn't think the Broncos were going to make the playoffs, I thought it was going to take a year for a new coach and a new quarterback to gel. But the guy looks lost in the field. I know there's injuries, right? The hamstring, the shoulder, all that. But just simply look back at that Colts game. And I know everyone has a bad game. But that Colts game, the mistakes that he made in that game, inexcusable. Geno Smith wins that game. Geno, I can't believe I'm saying this. Geno Smith wins that game up against the Colts. It's wild, Ryan, how quickly the perception and the outlook of Russell Wilson has just totally changed. And I don't think his obsession is being the best quarterback that he could be. I think his obsession is being the biggest star and the coolest guy in the room. And it's time to say it. Russell Wilson has lost his way and has lost what made him great. And it's starting to affect what we see on the football field.
You're 100% right. I think you're right. And that goes back to just kind of bringing a head coach that you think is strong enough to get him back in. Because otherwise, like, you talk about solutions. Like, what is it? What's going to reel him in?
If I'm Sean Payton, I'm not taking this job right now. I just had Drew Brees, who is a great quarterback. But Drew Brees, at the end of his career, got hurt, wasn't the same quarterback, couldn't make the plays anymore. Why should I expect Russell Wilson? Not everyone plays late into their 30s, their early 40s, like Brady and Brees and what Rodgers is doing and some of those other quarterbacks. That's not normal. Why should I expect, if I'm Sean Payton, I could have the pick of all the jobs that I want, why would I anticipate that I could trust Russ? I would have a trust issue right now with Russell Wilson. And if the Chargers job becomes available, I'm running to Los Angeles before I would take the Denver Broncos job.
I still think it's an attractive job if you're Sean Payton. Now, Chargers, is it more attractive than the Chargers? I'd probably say no. I'd rather have Justin Herbert. Absolutely.
I'd rather have the Cowboys.
But
job.
Russ is 33. He's not, you know, let's also remember, like,
he hasn't
Drew Brees
played good in the last 2 years.
He
not,
hasn't.
Not everyone gets to that spot of being great at 40.
I think this is more just him, kind of what you're saying, losing his way, kind of getting wrapped up in things other than football and trying to be the man. Like, even you look at how he's playing, he always looks for the deep shot and doesn't check anything down. And
he's
basically
selfish.
Either a deep ball or a sack. If he can get back to just kind of remembering how to make winning football plays, I still think there's a lot there, a lot of talent you can tap back into. But right now, like you said, with this team, with the way everything is going right now, this is just a lost cause. I will come around full circle. I mean, this is the Titanic, and there's no getting the water out. All right, the ship is sinking.
And let me tell you this:
the water's not getting dumped out.
You are not allowed on the raft. All right.
Oh,
you are going down with the Titanic. You said Russell Wilson MVP, Russell Wilson Super Bowl MVP, Broncos winning the Super Bowl. You even said that Nathaniel Hackett was going to be a top three coach of the year, and he'd be better than Belichick after this season. That's all things you said. You are not allowed on the raft. You sink and die on the Titanic, unfortunately.
I have said, well, thank you. I have said I was wrong about Nathaniel Hackett earlier. Then I backed up. Well, I think it was MVP for
you
Russell Wilson
dug
first.
Your heels in deep on the Super
then
Bowl.
Then it was Hackett.
As
and
of
yesterday.
Last week.
Yes, you're right. I have.
You dope.
You know what? I'm going to be like Jack, but unlike Jack, I'm going to survive. All right? I will jump. I'm jumping off the Titanic. I'm jumping off.
There's no room for you.
I'm going in the freezing cold waters, and I am swimming my way 3,000 miles to shore.
We are putting you in storage. That is what we are doing.
This is
now
unfixable for this year.
Can you also admit that this offense outside of the quarterback is also overrated? The line stinks. I know Garrett Bowles is out. Jerry Jeudy, overrated. Cortland Sutton's good. It stinks that Tim Patrick got hurt. I like Javonte Williams, but he's hurt. Melvin Gordon's not great. He fumbles the ball. He got benched last night. Imagine getting benched by Nathaniel Hackett. That's like a career low moment. You got benched by a bozo of a coach.
Yeah, that's actually pretty bad. You may retire, honestly.
Wouldn't shock me. But, like, I think Russ miscalculated how good the situation was in Denver. They got a good defense. They don't got a good offense. The offensive pieces in Seattle are by far and away better than in Denver. DK, Lockett, Kenneth Walker now. Wait, what are you saying all what for?
You can't say Kenneth Walker and now. Chris Carson, who's healthy, was good.
Rashad Penny, I know he's hurt, but, you know, they have better you're telling me they don't have better pieces in Seattle?
I thought talent-wise, like, they didn't have a DK Metcalf receiver. I thought going into this year, the overall depth, if you add up everyone, running back, tight end, receiver, the sum would be greater than the whole.
No.
Or the whole would be greater than the sum of the parts, I should say.
You were wrong.
And injuries have left it incomplete.
You're telling me it's offensive that much different if Javonte Williams didn't get hurt? Russell can't make the throws right now.
I mean, Javonte Williams is banged up. I'm not making excuses. I think you're right. I've overestimated a little bit. Again, injuries are part of the reason why, at every level, injuries are part of the reason why this team stinks right now. Running back, you lose your best running back. Receiver, you lose your second best wide receiver.
This is not injuries, though.
The offensive line is banged up. I'm not saying it's the reason why. I'm saying this team stinks.
This much money, the great quarterbacks that Russ wanted to be, a great quarterback, they elevate.
I don't disagree. I think you're right. I'm just saying. I think part of the, if we're just talking about non-quarterback, everyone else around Russ, I think it's not as good as I thought, but also at the same time, I think injuries make it tough to fully evaluate when compared to Denver versus Seattle.
Kyle Whittingham, head coach of Utah, going to join us next. This is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
We continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. What a win for Utah last weekend. They're now 15th in the country as they're fresh off a 43-42 comeback victory over USC. Now joining us is head football coach of the defending Pac-12 champions, the Utah Utes. And that, of course, is Kyle Whittingham. Coach, always appreciate when you come on with us. Thanks for the time. Congrats on the win and how you been.
You bet. Appreciate you having me on, and we're doing pretty good right now. So we got a bye week, which comes at a great time for us, and then we are heading up to Pullman to play Washington State Cougars next week.
I remember when you joined us in the off season, right before the start of the year, you talked about your quarterback, Cam Rising, and you were saying how much of a great leader he is and how much heart he just shows each and every week. That was on full display on Saturday night. He put the team on his back, had 5 total touchdowns. Just how do you put that performance a few days later into words?
It was spectacular. I mean, he was responsible for 450, 60, 70 yards of total offense, somewhere in that range. And is just, as you mentioned, such a great leader for us, the leader of the leaders on our football team. And Cam Rising is the catalyst for everything we do on offense.
Now, you were aggressive. You elected to go for 2. I was screaming on my couch, go for 2, go for 2. You did so. I don't think I had an influence in that, to be clear. But take me through the decision to go for 2 in the win right there.
Yeah, we had taken over the ball with 6 minutes or so left in the game. And talked to our offensive coordinator, Andy Ludwig, and I said, now, if we're able to work this ball down the field and get in the end zone and the clock is under a minute, then we're going to most likely go for 2, so have a play in mind. And as it turned out, that exact scenario came up. We got, I think it was 40, 45 seconds left when we scored that last touchdown. And so that decision had already been made. And Andy dialed up the play, and Cam dropped back, and the route structure really was covered up. So we tucked the ball, and in Cam Rising fashion, found a way to get in the end zone, and that proved to be the game winner.
I'm just curious. You guys still are in play to defend your Pac-12 crown, but there were college football playoff expectations before the year. Now at 2 losses, if you guys only had 1 loss, you undefeated. Is that a different decision there? Does that maybe factor into it at all?
No, I don't think so. I think based on the ebb and flow of that game on Saturday night, and it was really a scoring contest. I mean, both offenses were extremely productive. I think we both ended up with, you know, over 550 yards and obviously a bunch of points. And so that was a decision that, you know, we just felt was the right one. And you know, as it turned out, it was right. Now, you're not always right making those decisions. Sometimes it backfires on you. But in this particular case, it worked out for us.
Kyle Whittingham from number 15 Utah here with us, the head coach for the Utes. You've gone up against some great quarterbacks this year, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Anthony Richardson, and then on Saturday night, Caleb Williams. What stood out to you the most about Caleb Williams?
Wow, what a competitor. He's got such a great skill set. I mean, his arm strength is phenomenal. He's got an arm that can make every throw. He's extremely difficult to sack. You know, we did sack him four times, but he's so strong and so elusive that he's a tough out when you try to sack him. Exceptional runner. You know, he pulled the ball down a few times and did some real damage running the football. And so he's a terrific quarterback. He's one of the best in the country. And you're right, we've played now a bunch of really good quarterbacks and guys that are tough to defend. And he certainly is one of them.
Was he the toughest quarterback to defend for you guys this year?
I think each of them brings something different to the table. He certainly has the ability to hurt you a bunch of different ways, and he does a great job taking care of the football. I think he's only thrown one interception the whole season, so he does a great job protecting the ball. But each of those three guys really bring a little bit something different. But it's hard to sit here and say, okay, it's one, two, and three. I can just tell you that each one has their challenges.
Kyle Whittingham here with us. So when you guys picked up that second loss after the UCLA game, did you have to refocus your team leading into USC, or was it just a quick move it, flush it, and those kids were locked in laser focus?
I'd say a little bit of both. You know, we had a team meeting and talked about where we were and that, all our goals as far as trying to repeat as Pac-12 champs were still right there in front of us. But the margin for error had been cut down to virtually zero, and so we had to be at our best. And it starts, you know, 1 week at a time, and starting with the Trojans, we knew that was a big challenge. But our guys did a great job of putting the game behind us, the UCLA game, and moving on, and having a great week of preparation, and going into that game with the exact right mindset. I mean, we were passionate. We had a lot of energy, and it showed during the course of the game.
I've been loving the Pac-12 this year, Coach. I know nationally sometimes it doesn't get a lot of spotlight and praise as it should, but I think the conference has been unbelievable this year.
I agree. We've got a bunch of good teams, and that can work against you because, once again, we may cannibalize each other and end up beating each other up. Of course, that doesn't bode well for the CFP implications or possibilities. But I agree with you. I think the middle of the conference especially – from the last few years, it's really elevated, and there's six or seven teams that are really playing good football.
It was very fitting on Saturday. We talked about Cam and how he stepped up to the occasion. Also, Dalton Kincaid with 234 yards and that big score. Just what did you see out of Dalton? I know it's no surprise to you, but that was one great performance.
It was, and Dalton is one of the best tight ends in the nation, and I don't think a lot of people really appreciate how good he is, and that was on full display Saturday night. He was a featured part of the offense in this game, and will be every game, obviously, but really Cam and him started connecting early, and it didn't stop. I mean, we had 16 targets and 16 catches, and that's incredible. And then to have 230 plus yards was just a huge plus for our team, and Dalton is a fierce competitor, and not only that, he's just an absolute tremendous athlete, there's an argument he's the best athlete on our team overall. I mean, he's that athletic.
And there's no doubt he's going to be making plays on Sunday soon, right?
I don't think there's any question about that. You know, he's 6'4 and a half, 6'4 and a quarter, about 245 pounds. He's a prototypical tight end in that league as far as I'm concerned.
Did you ever understand why Devin Lloyd fell in the draft? Because he's on pace, Coach, in his rookie year to have 160 tackles. We saw the mock drafts, top 15, and he ended up falling towards the end of the first round.
Yeah, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it, and I think he's proven a bunch of teams wrong right now. Like you said, I mean, his production is off the charts, And I couldn't believe that all those teams just kept, you know, those, the draft choices just kept ticking by, and he was a bargain. Where they got him was an absolute steal. And like I said, he's making a lot of people disappointed right now that they didn't take him.
Who's Devin Lloyd the person, just wondering?
Incredible. One of the best leaders that we've had come through here. One of the hardest workers, self-made guy, came in here with a safety and wide receiver background, really, out of high school. He was a skilled player, but had the frame and the length and the makeup that we felt he was a projection as a linebacker for us. So it wasn't something that took us by surprise. That was our projection when we recruited him. And he was a tremendous player for us, great leader, and just the kind of guy you'd love to have in your program.
On the way out with Kyle Whittingham from Utah, what we saw on Saturday is everything that is right with college football. The crowd was unbelievable. When you were walking off the field, what's just going through your mind in front of all that chaos and all that mayhem?
Yeah, just trying to enjoy the moment and savor it, because those moments don't come around, you know, all the time. I mean, those are pretty special situations and occasions, and just to take it all in. And that's what I was trying to do, is just soak it in, soak it up. And I was so happy for our players, and, you know, to see them, fight tooth and nail every step of the way and to come out on top was extremely gratifying.
Yeah, I'd be remiss before we let you run. We talked about Cam. We talked about Dalton. Is there another player or two that you want to highlight from what they displayed on Saturday?
The offensive line as a whole, I would say. You know, we went into that game, and SC was the national leader in sacks, and we threw the ball 45-plus times and didn't give up one sack. And so I think the offensive line was terrific, and they're always the unsung heroes, but they're the ones that gave Cam the time and the opportunity to put up all those numbers. And so I would say that the offensive line needs a little bit of a shout-out.
Well, Coach, always do appreciate the time. Always love our conversations. Thanks so much for jumping on, and good luck the rest of the way.
Okay, appreciate you having me on. Take care.
Appreciate Kyle Whittingham joining us right there on the Zach Gelb Show. I got to quickly pivot to this. The NFL owners' meetings. This is like a reality TV show. Right now, we start the show off a few hours ago, about 3.5 hours ago, talking about Jim Irsay just basically saying Dan Snyder needs to lose the team and that all the other owners pretty much would agree with them or enough to get the 24 votes to vote Dan Snyder out. Now, personally, I'm happy Jim Irsay said what he said. I didn't think, even though I believed that momentum was moving in the direction that Dan Snyder was going to eventually lose the team, I didn't think an owner would publicly speak about this. So that, to me, Marco Belletti, El Capitan here. That was surprising that Jim was so honest and blunt. And I know he's usually honest when he speaks and he can sometimes sound a little bit crazy. I didn't expect the other owners publicly to bash Dan Snyder.
Stunning and a little dangerous, because that's not something you want to do. It's supposed to be, look, right or wrong, it's that brotherhood of owners that you don't really bash each other publicly and you always try to have each other's back. It's not the way you really want to go about it. But it's been going on since it started.
But it shows you the tone in that room that a lot of those guys are starting to turn or raise an eyebrow when it comes to Dan Snyder.
I agree, and I think they're done, and I agree with Irsay. I think they have enough of the votes to be able to do this if they can figure out a way to get rid of Snyder. But to do it publicly is a little bit of a surprise. And I'm sure when he walked in the room, one or two of the owners walked over, Jim, we don't do it like this. We can't do it like this. Because what happens if it does? There's legalese.
Eventually.
Yeah, but there's legalese involved too. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of red tape. Let's not do it in public. Let's do it behind closed doors.
And he has to know that he has the support of the other owners, because if you're like the one guy in the fraternity that starts speaking out, then they're like, okay, we actually don't want you, even if you may be right in the fraternity, because you're going against the fraternity.
Right. And again, that's not the right way to go about things, but that's just the way it works. That's the way it is. I mean, you know, not to sound crass, but it's almost like mafia-ish. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the way it is. Like, you have to follow the rules. Like, you're involved, you're in the family, you got to follow the rules of the family.
And I know Snyder sent a memo out yesterday that the ESPN article saying that he hired private investigators and all that, all that he denied. I think he definitely did it, I would imagine. I think he just didn't find much, so now he's trying to backtrack it, and somehow this did get out. So I also think that's the other owners going, you're really going to hire investigators because you were in the wrong to try to find our dirty laundry?
Yeah, I don't know if it's that he didn't find as much because
nothing damaging. Let's just
say. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. Who knows what he found and what he didn't find? Because wouldn't shock me if a lot of owners have a lot of stuff that they don't want out there. But I think
what was going to be so damaging that if that's how this played out, that Dan Snyder was going to get kicked out of the league, where most of the people are going to be celebrating, exciting, exuberant about it, doing cartwheels in the street. That goes, oh, no, we need to highlight this, this, and this. And he has something that is so big, it would make him look good.
Again, I don't think it would make him look good, but there's a lot of, you're talking about a lot of old people with a lot of money that don't like to look bad. So just the idea of, you know, Dan, maybe it's Snyder just trying to backtrack it so that he doesn't get it out in public because he's still hoping that they let him slide. Because they've let him slide for how long now?
Yeah.
So I think it's just the
like
idea.
The kiss and make up kind
of like,
thing.
Yeah, like, look, I think he's
probably released I was in the wrong, even though I'll say I didn't do it. It's me waving the white flag.
It's all that nonsense to try to avoid losing the club, which he obviously doesn't want to do. So, again, it's the, you know, it's family business that they are trying to not get into the public.
Well, now, Robert Kraft got into it, according to Seth Wickersham, with Jerry Jones. And I remember Jerry Jones has been outspoken in the past about a new contract for Roger Goodell and some of the terms in that contract. Not necessarily that he doesn't want Roger Goodell back, just the terms of the contract. So the NFL owners, according to Wickersham, voted 31-1 on Tuesday to permit their compensation committee to open negotiations on a new contract with Commissioner Roger Goodell. But not before two of the league's most powerful owners, the Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones and the Patriots owner Robert Kraft, engaged in a heated exchange. Multiple league and ownership sources told ESPN. The sources said Kraft joined the overwhelming majority in strong support of the measure, with Jones, the lone dissenter, in the owners-only session, eventually telling Kraft, "Don't F with me." Kraft replied, "Excuse me? Don't mess with me," Jones said back.
I'm sorry. To me, a lot of this is funny. You've got
it's hilarious.
You've got billionaire 80-something-year-old guys that are acting tough. It's just ridiculous.
Shouldn't Robert Kraft really be on ridiculous. His honeymoon right now and not at these owner meetings? The newlyweds.
Stop.
Like, Robert Kraft.
Like, I mean, like, again, like, I mean, are we serious? Like, some of this stuff, it's like, what are you
Shouldn't
doing?
Be in Tulum?
I mean, they're both in their 80s. What are you doing? I mean, can you just enjoy? You won. You won.
You're
billionaires. Like, are you serious? You're sitting in a room and you're arguing with each other that almost you're going to come to blows? Stop it.
And
Stop
also, it doesn't surprise me, the cojones on Jerry Jones, but you're the lone dissenter. And you are the most powerful owner, but then the next most powerful owner, probably Bob Kraft. And you go, "Don't F with me," because you're pouting because you didn't get your way?
Neither one of these guys have any idea what it's like to not get their way. So that's, again, petulant children at 80-something years old and billionaires. Yeah, all of it makes sense.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. Another day is in the books, and we're taking stock of the sports world. It's time to find out who's up and who's down. Let's end the day right and hit the closing bell. Only on the Zach Gelb Show.
The Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Vikings edge rusher Za'Darius Smith made his presence known on Sunday as he registered two sacks against the Dolphins in Minnesota's 24-16 win. Smith also recovered two tackles for loss as the Vikings defense forced three turnovers. Give a stock up to Za'Darius Smith. Let's hear Giancarlo Stanton. Giancarlo, no si puesto parlo, I think is how you say it. A three-run homer in the first. This made it Yankees 3 and the Guardians nothing. Here's one John Sterling.
And the 2-0. Swung on and hit in the air to right center and deep. That ball is gone. Oh, my. It is a Stantonian home run.
Oh, there was no Giancarlo, no si puesto parlo there? Just a Stantonian home run? Okay, let's hear the Yankees final out as they advance to the ALCS to have a little date once again with the Houston Astros.
Pitch. Hit on the ground, a short. Go to second, force, in time. Ball game over. American League Division Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
Give a stock up to the New York Yankees. They have an ALCS date tomorrow with the Houston Astros. The Phillies have extended their lead. Bryce Harper hit a solo shot. Now Kyle Schwarber hit a solo shot as well. You go to the bottom of the sixth in Slam Diego. And the Slam Diego Padres have been a no-show so far. Only one hit. Phillies up 2-0 as they go to the bottom of the sixth. Give the Fightins a stock up. Did you see what they're doing for Black Friday next year? Gonna have a football game at 3 p.m. I don't know about you, Hickey. I love this. Because it gets me out of potentially going Black Friday shopping. But then also, more importantly, there's nothing like leftover Thanksgiving food. And now I get leftover Thanksgiving food, like some cold lasagna with NFL football for one game at 3 p.m. Eastern. I'm a huge fan of that. Give it a stock up. You a fan of the Black Friday game?
Not really.
Oh, you suck.
Well, it's
you're
a
no
full
fun.
Day of college football. I just want to sit down and watch some good college football, and that's all. I'm watching football anyway.
Well, what's wrong with what
you know,
the game
Arkansas, LSU,
in?
I don't need my attention to be taken away. Missouri, you know, always puts a little rivalry game there. Nebraska, Iowa, come on. Like, where else you rather be on a Black Friday? Get me there.
You don't have multiple TVs?
When Texas goes to the SEC, Texas A&M back on Black Friday. In. Let's go.
You can't sprinkle in a...
I hate dividing my attention. I hate it.
Well, that's a you problem.
That is a me problem. Thanks, Jeff.
Also going to give a stock up to Rob Thompson and Bob Melvin, the managers of the Padres and the Phillies. Two wildcard teams in this NLCS. Give them both a stock up. Let's hear these loser Padre fans. I'm sorry, but this is like a pump-up song on one of the local news stations. I'm not calling all Padre fans losers, but these fans are losers. Like, these fans singing. Go ahead.
Billy going down to yellow and brown. That's what's in. Padres on the loose. Let's go, Goose. That's what's in. Bryce gonna lose, and Manny's gonna cruise. That's what's in. Give Philly no slack, and send them back. That's what's in.
That's a no for me, dog. Simon Cowell, Randy Jackson, Paul Abdul would turn those people away in a split second. That's the worst television I've ever seen. That's the worst audio I've ever heard. And that's the worst pump-up song I've ever heard. That makes the... Remember the guy standing outside the Commander's ticket office? We are Commanders. Bump, ba-dum, bump, 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 bump. That dude's in the Hall of Fame compared to that crap that I just heard.
You know what the worst part is about that entire song? I guarantee you this time next week you'll be humming it.
No.
It'll be stuck in
it's
your head.
It's not catchy. I don't even get it.
I don't either, but it's been in my head all
Trust
day.
Me, I have dumb things that are catchy that get stuck in my head. What's catchy about that? What do you remember
it's
from that?
It's already started. That's what's in.
No, it was so offbeat.
I
it was
can't
terrible.
Get out of my
you need
head.
A good beat. Like if the song just sucked in terms of the lyrics, but there was like a good beat and a little flow, you would get it. I don't understand that. Stock down. Sell! Also got to give a stock down to Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett. Do I even need to give an explanation for this one? No. Stock down. J.C. Jackson got the big contract from the Chargers last night. He got benched. Bill Belichick knows when to get rid of a good young player that he developed. J.C. Jackson looks lost right now. Stock down. And finally, I have to actually pivot back to a stock up. I'm giving a stock up to a text I got today from Leroy Horde, former Michigan player, former Pro Bowl running back. He texted me randomly today in the afternoon. You let Hot Take Hickey know I didn't forget about that ass beating we gave his boys last week. Fifth in the country against the run. Ha, 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 ha. Michigan put up what, like 415 rushing yards, I think?
Yep, they did.
What was the San Diego song? That's what's in. Ah,
That is not in. That is out. On the outs.
Give a stock up to Leroy Hoard. And that's the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Coming up tomorrow, Jason La Canfora will join us at 7 p.m. Eastern. And remember yesterday when I said I had a little treat for all my good friends and loyal listeners on 1250 AM The Fan? Told you I was going to give you that surprise tomorrow. If you're listening right now, you get the early preview of that surprise. Confirmed. The great Bart Winkler will be joining us tomorrow on the Zach Gelb Show at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific, 7:20 p.m. Central, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, I get that right? Okay. And 6 p.m. Mountain. 6:20 p.m. Mountain. We got that right. The great Bart Winkler tomorrow. All right, we out. Bye-bye. Have a great night, everybody.